Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem. Welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi Baba Basra Kuf Chaf Beis. We are on the bottom of Kuf Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, so it's at the second to the last line. Iboiluhu. So the question was posed as follows. We all know that Eretz Yisrael was allocated based on either the number of people who left Mitzrayim or the number of people who entered Eretz Yisrael. We had two opinions, L'yoytzi Mitzrayim or L'boi Ha'aretz. But the question is like this. Was it allocated per individual or was it a two-stage appropriation process? Firstly, to the Shevatim, so they took the land and split it, you know, into 12 parts, one per Shevet, and then they turned around and each Shevet supplied his members with his fitting shear. Was it done that way, or was it done straight per individual, bypassing the Shevet division? Iboilu, Eretz Yisrael is Shevatim Ifluk, was the first divided amongst the Shevatim. So suppose you have a Shevet very populated, lots of people. Each person will end up getting a relatively smaller portion than the individual who receives his chelik when he belongs to a shevet which has less people, right? Because the shvatim got equal shares, but then, you know, they had to make do with whatever, you know, members they had. Iboilu Eretz Yisrael l'shvatim ifluk was the first divider amongst the shvatim, and then to the individuals. Oidum l'karkaf gavri. Karkov means a head, gavri of people. Iflug was a divider amongst the people directly. So basically everybody got an equal share. That's the shayla. Toshma, let's bring a raya from a brisa. Actually, we can bring a raya from a pasuk. Pasuk says, Bein rav lema'at, that the land was allocated based on the lottery, on the goyrol, as we're going to see later. Bein rav lema'at, whether you get a big share or a small share. How can a person get a big share and the other person a small share? Oh, because it was done based on Shvatim, as we explained. So the Shvatim got equal shares, but then a very populated Shevet ended up giving its members only small portions, as opposed to a Shevet which was sparsely populated. So that indicates to us that in fact it was done per Shvatim. Vayitanya, we have another brisa, which clearly articulated as such, that it was a two-stage process. It started with the Shvatim and then transferred to the individuals. Asida Eretz Yisrael tishit tzchalak l'shleisha shvatim. In the future, Asid Lavoi, Eretz Yisrael will be reallocated amongst 13 Shvatim. And soon we're going to see who got the 13th portion, because originally it was only to 12. Shvatim. Shebetchila leinischalka l'shnimasar shvatim. So that's one difference between the original allocation to the future, to l'asid lavoi. And the Rashbam says, it cannot be that it's because we add Levi, which actually will be added, because he says, initially it was Menashe and Ephraim, two sons of Yosef, getting separate chalokim, which is going to change. Mashiach will come, they'll be merged into one chelik, and Shevet Levi will get another chelik, but it's still going to be the same number 12. Because Shevet Levi is just going to take over, so it's still 12. How do we get the 13? The Gemara later will tell us who's going to get the 13th portion. But clearly, the Brisa relates the Chaluka to the Shvatim. So there you go. Number 2, B'lein is Chalka El B'Kesef. There was some sort of reimbursement system. So if you get a more valuable piece of land, you have to compensate your neighbor, you have to work it out monetarily. So that's fear going all around. The more at this point figures that it means that if you got a better quality piece of land, then you have to, you got your iddis, another fellow gets poor quality ziburis, and you have to compensate him. We'll see later how this works. Shnama ben rav lema'at, which teaches us once again that, you have to calculate the difference between a better piece of land, Rav. So the initial pshat in Rav and Ma'at is quantitatively, right? A larger portion, a smaller portion. And here we speak about qualitative differences. So you have to account for that as well. Ben Rav Lama'at. Shenemar Ben Rav Lama'at. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, for instance, let me give you an example of this discrepancy in value. So Abba Yehuda, apparently the property in Yehuda was more valuable. So a pound of wheat in Yehuda was worth like 5 in Galil. Shava Chamish in Megalil because of the lower quality in the grain. And the Brisa continues. They needed a geirel, a lottery, for the allocation process. That wasn't enough. They need the Urim V'Tumim. That's the Choshen Mishpat on the Kohen Gadol's chest. So they would access the Urim V'Tumim by way of, like a type of Ruach HaKodesh. And this sort of joint combined system of the Urim V'Tumim with the Geirah would dictate which portion is allocated to which Shevet. Shenemar Al-Pi HaGeirah. So the Geirah is the lottery. But Al-Pi HaGeirah means that there was an additional dictation process through the Urim V'Tumim, that the Kohen Gadol would notice the letters popping out, and that's how he would know which way to go. Okay, so how does this work? How do we sort of merge both systems, the Urim V'Tumim in conjunction with the Goyrel system? Elazar Mulubash Urim V'Tumim. Elazar Kohen Gadol was wearing the Urim V'Tumim. V'Yeshua, and Yeshua the leader. V'Chal Yisrael, and all of the Klal Yisrael, Imdim L'Fanav, standing in front of him. V'Kalfi Shel Shvatim. Kalfi is this lottery box containing the lotteries, all the names of the Shvatim, the Kalfi Shel Tchumin, another box containing the various territories, Menachem Lefanov sitting in front of him, Vayimacham Ruach HaKodesh, and before he would pick up any lottery ticket, Elazar HaKohen would first connect to Ruach HaKodesh, connect to the Urim V'Tumim, and ask how it's going to happen, and based on that he would respond, conveying the Ruach HaKodesh, the message from Hashem, Vayim, he would declare as follows, Zebulun, Shevet Zebulun is going to be Oile, that's going to be the first one we're going to pick out here. So he's sort of anticipating who's going to get the first lottery. Tchum akoy oyla imoy. And guess what? Which territory is he going to earn? The territory called Tchum akoy. That's going to be the ticket that we're going to pick for him. Okay. So he's sort of, predicting what's going to happen in a minute. And that's what happened. Torah b'kalfi shal shvatim. So the one in charge would shake up the box with the tickets of the shvatim. And guess what? He would pick out, as predicted, then he would shake up the box with the territory tickets, Taraf Pekalvish al Tchumin, and guess what? And he picked out exactly as predicted the Tchum Akoy. And he would go on and do the same with Adi Shvatim as well. He'd reconnect to Ruach HaKodesh. He would say, for instance, Naftali Oyle. Next comes Naftali. And he's going to win the area called Tchum Ginoisar, which was around the Kinneres area. And that's what happened. The Torah Pekalfish Shvatim, you shake up the Shvatim, pick out Volubiyadin Naftali. Torah Pekalfish Tchumim, pick out the territories, right? Shake it up and pick it out. Volubiyadin Tchum Ginoisar, and he would encounter as predicted. V'chein kol Shevet V'Shevet, the same exact thing happened with all the Shvatim. So it was a joint system, the Urim V'Tumim, the Ruach HaKodesh, dictating what the Goyrel will encounter. So they needed the Goyrel. That was the mitzvah, perhaps connected to the concept of Hashem Tomech Goroli, that it's all predestined by Hashem, the concept of Goyrol, this is my lot, right? But it was first dictated by the Ruach HaKodesh, and the Rashbam explains, this would, put the nation at ease. So it's not just, a lucky, random, system. They knew it was through Nevuah, it was anticipated. V'yoidim shechaluka yisharahi, says the Rashbam, and that's why it first had to be preceded with the Ruach HaKodesh prediction. Continues the price. V'loike chalukah shel olam hazeh. Chalukah shel olam haba. Olam haba, when Mashiach comes, the allocation will be very different than today. Olam hazeh, nowadays, Adam yesh lo yisod de lovan, ein lo yisod de pardes. You have either or. One person has a grain field, he doesn't have an orchard. So de pardes, ein lo yisod de lovan. If you have an orchard, you don't have a grain field. So, you are what you are, you have what you have. Olam haba, but in the days to come, everybody will have, a sliver of every type of land. Ein lo chakol echad ve'echad. There will be nobody who will be missing any type of land. She'en loy bahar, or v'shvela be'emek, will have a piece of the mountain, the flatlands, the valley. Shenemar, Sha'ar Ruven Echad, Sha'ar Yehuda Echad, Sha'ar Levi Echad. Everybody will have an identical piece of property, everything, a bit of everything. Oh, and clearly the pasuk indicates that Levi, right? Like we said before, Levi will have a chelik in Eretz Yisrael. Furthermore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu melchalak len ba'atzmai. It's going to be distributed by Hashem Himself. Shenama ve'ele machlekusam nu'um Hashem. Okay, in any rate, what does the Brisa say? It's Shevet-oriented, not individual-oriented. It starts with the Shvatim, and then, in turn, distributed amongst their members. Ketanim, yes. What does the Brisa say? Shebetchila l'nischalka elosh nemasar shvatim. Oh, initially it was a 12 shevet allocation. So what does this tell us about our question? Shmamino, we can conclude from this, l'shvatim ifluk shmamino, that in fact it was first allocated per tribe and then to the members of that tribe. Amar, let's go back to the Brisa. Asida Eretz Yisrael shetoschalek l'shloish asar shvatim. In the future, it's going to be distributed to 13 shvatim, 13 portions. Who gets the 13th? Idach Laman. Who's the 13th for? We covered all the Shvatim. Who's left? Amar Chizal Anasi. The king, Melech HaMashiach, the leader, will earn a chelak. Dechsiv, the pasuk says, V'ha'ibed ha'ir, the servant of the ear of the city of Yerushalayim, the leader, Yavdu. Mikol Shifte Yisrael, he'll be served by all of Israel, meaning everybody will trim back and contribute a portion to his chelak, he'll end up with a portion like everybody else. Amalir Pabalabai, Ema Runger Ba'alma, who says that Ya'avdu means, it says to serve him, who says they're going to actually provide him with a portion of territory. Maybe Runger, they'll just serve him. Runger Ba'alma, just, you know, as a personal service to assist him in what he's doing, but not necessarily a piece of property. You can't suggest that it's limited to that. The pasuk clearly indicates that it's going to be a property-related allocation. He'll take from this, from that. Everybody's going to cut back a bit, and he's going to end up with a portion of land. So the allocation is also value-oriented, meaning they had to balance out the inequality in terms of value and reimburse accordingly. Now, what does this mean? Lamai. What type of reimbursement? What type of equalization took place? Ilam l'shufer v'sanya was based on inequality in terms of quality. He took a better piece, he took a worse piece, and they have to reimburse each other. Who would do that? Who would be willing to take a poor quality field and get, you know, paid off on the side? He'd rather have a better quality field, which is a, you know, a better investment, just getting paid off on the side. Atu b'shuftani askini. He was speaking about silly people. Why would they allow that? Why would they acquiesce to that? Ella rather says the Gemara, apparently that wasn't the case here. Because truthfully, if a person would end up with a lower quality piece of land, he would insist on getting a larger portion to compensate for the lower quality. He wouldn't just, you know, allow himself to be paid off monetarily. So what then does the Brisa mean that there was some monetary mixing up going on? Ela lekroiva b'rechayka, in terms of location. So the one further from Yerushalayim, they all wanted to be near Yerushalayim, closer to the Kedusha, more secure, center of the land, rather than being at the boundary with the Goyim. So the one who took further away was allowed compensation for this, you know, inferior location. Ketanai, as we have in the Brisa, that there was a monetary compensation system going on. That it wasn't monetarily compensated, rather the one who got a further location was compensated with a larger piece of property. They used a girl system. Shenamar ach begirl. Tana, we learned in the Brisa. Ach begirl. Ach is an exception, exclusion. Not everybody was included in the girl system. Yotzu, Yoshua v'Kalev. These two individuals, these two tzaddikim, got their piece of land without resorting to a lottery. Lamai, what does this mean? Ilemed lo shokul klal. What are we accepting them? What does it mean? They're excluded from territory at all? That's what the Gemara figured at the Hava Amina. At this point, you figure they're not getting anything, really? Ha'ashtad lav dedu shokul. How could you say that? Look, we learned yesterday that they overtook the Meraglim's territory. So they even took stuff that, you know, wasn't technically destined for them. The Tumibaya goes without saying that they got their own. Rather, what we meant to say is, of course they got. They got a supersized territory, but they got without the Goyrel. El Al Pi Hashem, rather, was dictated by Hashem himself. Yeshua, how do we know that he got it directly? The Chsiv Al Pi Hashem, right? Nosn Lois, Ira, Shashal, Timnas, Serach, Bahar Ephraim. So you got this place in Har Ephraim, according to Hashem's dictates. And before we go on to Kalev, we just have, as an aside, we have a kasha on the wording. Because here it says Chsiv Serach. The town was called Serach. Uksiv, but elsewhere, the same town is called Cheres. Same letters, but rearranged. Omar Belazar, it means like this. Betchila initially Perisek Cheres. Initially, before Yeshua arrived, the produce was as dry as pottery. It wasn't really very luscious. But eventually, when Yeshua took over, he imbued a bracha, blessing, and success on the area, and the produce was fatty and tasty, and it would just rot because of its lusciousness. Igad Amri, some go the other way. Betchila Masrich initially was Serach, because it was over, you know, it would get overripe and wouldn't really, wasn't really durable. Ubasoif Kecheres, but eventually, you know, it lost a little bit of its fattiness, and although it was luscious and tasty, but it was able to be stored, and it was a successful crop. So that was regarding Yeshua's place. What about Kaliv? Which area did he earn? He got Chevron, like Moshe dictated. And he got rid of all the inhabitants. Says the Gemara, Chevron ir mikla havoy. How could we say that he got Chevron? He chased away the giants there. Chevron was an ir miklat. It was one of those cities allocated to the Levium as a refuge city for a murderer. So how can it be that it was given to Kalev? Chevron ir miklat havoy. Amar Abaya, you're right. The actual city was an ir miklat. It was not given to Kalev, rather parvaha. Parvaroha. We're speaking about the outskirts, the suburbs of Chevron, and that was Kalev's territory. Continues the Mishnah. You should know that whether it's a son who's inheriting or a daughter in the absence of a son, they're equal, on equal footage, equal footing, equal level when it comes to inheriting. The Gemara will explain exactly what this means. Ella, but you should know there's a distinction between the inheritance received from a father versus inheritance received from a mother. Regarding a bechor who takes double portion, that only applies to territory received from a father, not from the mother, as we learned a couple of days ago. Elosha ben noitel pishnaim nichsi av, although he's a bechor, he deserves double portion. It only pertains to father's assets. Ve'enoy noitel pishnaim nichsi av, it doesn't apply to mother's assets. One more distinction between mother's and father's assets, v'abonis, regarding daughters. We know there's a takana, we learned in the Maseches Ksuba, it's a tenai bezin, a tenai ksuba, that daughters are continuously supported until they get married from their father's assets, right? The father passes away, they have a right to be supported until they're out. V'abonis nizoynos minichsei av, but this only applies to father's assets. V'enon nizoynos minichseim, but if it's not the father's assets, rather the mother passed away, they don't have no right to get mezainis. Rather, we apply the halacha of Yerusha and not the halacha of mezainis. Now let's go back to the beginning of the Mishnah. We start off with Echad HaBen, Echad HaBas Ben Nachla, which almost sounds like son and daughter have equal rights to Yerusha. Really? My Echad HaBen, Echad HaBas Ben Nachla. What does that mean? Ilayim, do you mean to say, the Yarti Ki Adodi, that whether it's a son or son-daughter, they both have equal share in the Yerusha? Really? Son takes priority, as we learned. Hotanam, we have learned already that ben kaidun labas. Son precedes the daughter. So when there's a son, he takes over. Or kol yiraytzei reichai shol ben kaidun labas. His offspring are prioritized over the daughter as well. So what do we mean that they're both equal? Sima nafsham. Omar avnachem bar yitzchak. Omar, the Mishnah means like this. We don't mean that a daughter has an equal share in the Yerusha like her brother. No. Hachikamar, the Mishnah means like this. When, in the event that a daughter is Yerush, for instance, in the absence of a son, so you should know she has the same rights as a son would have if he was here. Echad aben v'echad abas, noitlin, they have a right to take, b'roi, kibamuchsak, in something which was meant for their father or mother, just like if the father has it in his possession, which means to say like this, just like a son, or in a case when there's no son, a daughter, inherit their father, in terms of things that he already had in his possession, muchsak, they have the same right to collect something which came to him later. Let's say father died and then grandfather. So the portion that was destined for their father is called roi. It was only destined, it was meant to come. But that too is considered father's assets, which eventually trickles down to this heir, to this yerush. Really? Is that the Mishnah? Is that what the Mishnah is coming to teach us? We know that already from the story of B'nai Tzlafchad, who inherited A, their father's portion directly, and also their father's rights in their grandfather's Yerusha, even though it hadn't yet arrived. Perhaps their father died first. Still, they had a right to collect that. So we see that they have a right to be Yerush Ro'i as well. Hanami Tanina. It's been learned in the other mission of Noi Slavchad, right? The daughters of Slavchad. How many portions, how many shares in Eretz Yisrael did they receive? Three. Notlo Shlesha Chalakim. Benachla. Why three? Number one, Chelek Avi and Shoya Mietzi Mitzrayim. They were entitled to their father's portion in Eretz Yisrael because he left Mitzrayim, which gave him that entitlement. Number two, their grandfather Chefer left Mitzrayim as well. So they got their father's share in the grandfather's portion. The pot that he got b'nichsei chefer and his grandfather and their grandfather together with, you know, with Tzlafa's brothers, they share their grandfather's Yerusha. So clearly, even though it wasn't yet received by chefer, so they have a right to it. Why repeat the same halacha now Mishnah again? Void, another question, a more grammatical question. If you take a look at the Mishnah, look, it starts with echad aben v'echad abas b'nachla. Son and daughter, okay, have equal rights. As we explain. So we have no reference to father's assets, mother's assets, not going into that. We're discussing son and daughter. Ella, but you should know there is a distinction between mothers and fathers. Who's talking about mother? We never referenced mothers and fathers. Why are we making a distinction in something which we haven't yet referenced? Void my Ella, what's the Ella all about? How does the Mishnah flow from one thing to the next? Ella, my Rapapa says, Rapapa, I'll explain to you the Mishnah. Hachi Gamet, Mishnah means like this. We start with Echad Aben v'Echad Abbas Noitlin Chelek v'Bechira. Whether it's a son, or if there's no son and there's a daughter, they have a right to their father's second portion in the grandfather's assets. Just like they inherit their father's portion in the grandfather's assets. If the father happens to be a Bechir, like Tzlafchad was, which gives him a second entitlement, the kids are Yerush that as well. Echad aben v'echad abas noitlum chelek b'bchayr. 1 second, that's also a halacha that we already know from the other Mishnah. That's how they got three portions, right? Now, mitanina, it's been learned in the past Mishnahs. V'shayu b'chayr, noitlum shnei chalokim, because Tzlafchad was a b'chayr. That entitled him to double portion, and that's what trickled down to his daughters. So why repeat that halacha again? V'oy, the next question is the grammatical question. What's the Ella all about? V'oy my Ella. Elam Ravashi, I'll tell you pshat in the Mishnah. Hachi Kamad Mishnah means like this. We start with Echad Aben Ben Abonim, Vechad Bas Ben Abonis, a brand new halacha which we have never yet discussed. A person has 5 kids, 5 sons, or 5 daughters, right? Either or. He's allowed to divert all his assets to one of his sons, or in the case of daughters, to one of the daughters. So typically, a will is like a gift during his lifetime, but you can't divert Yerusha, you can't rearrange the halachas of Yerusha, it's going against the Torah. However, there's a halacha. If you're redirecting it to an eligible Yerush, you're not sending it off to a stranger. You have 5 sons and you decide, I want to favor 1 son, give him all. That's okay. Because you're just rearranging the Yerusha system. Echad ben ben abonim, vechad bas ben abonis, Imam Rav will declare, Yirash kol nechasa, he should get everything of mine as a Yerush. Dvar of kayamin, it works. And that's what the Mishnah is teaching us. Whether it's a son amongst sons, whether it's a daughter amongst daughters, which entitles them to Yerusha, he can choose to grant that member of his family the entire Yerusha. Kaman, who's speaking? Rabbi Yechon Breika, like that Shita? Hoktan el Kaman, that's been discussed in a different mission already. Rabbi Yechon Breika Omer, Im Omer al Misha Roy Yerusha, if he indicated that he wants to divert everything to a member of his family who is eligible to be a Yerush, Dvar of Kayamin. We stick to it, it works. Al Mishayna Roy Liyosha, but if he directed it to a stranger who's not Roy, who's not eligible, you can't do that. Because the Torah instructs you otherwise. Ain't Dvar of Kayam. So again, what's the point of the Mishnah repeating the same halacha? V'chitema kosasim lantana. Could be a chenobroke? Oh, perhaps. Yeah, there is a machlekes, but perhaps the Mishnah was trying to be soysing, to give us an unnamed Mishnah, an anonymous Mishnah. We know that many times Rabbi HaKadosh, Rabbi Danasi would compose his Mishnahs in this way. Author it as a Stam Mishnah, so that we follow it, Lahalacha Lamaisa. So yeah, although it's been discussed later, but perhaps Rabbi wants to repeat it, because he wants to weigh it down, Lahalacha Lamaisa, that we adopted as Halacha. Well, it says the Gemara, it's not going to work in this case, because the sequence is wrong. Stam, because our Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah, unnamed Mishnah, but then it's followed by a dispute, V'chakach Machlekes. So clearly it's not anonymous. It's not a consensus. You see, in order for this system to work, starting point is a machlekes. And then, the Mishnah would just take one shita and adopt it as a halacha lemaisa, as an unnamed consensus shita. That works. But here's the other way around. We start as an unnamed Mishnah, and then we go on to machlekes. Apparently, it's not by consensus. There is still an ongoing dispute. V'stam b'chakach machlekesi. And in this case, v'stam, followed by machlekes, b'chakach machlekes, en lochkes stam. We don't adopt this stam as a halacha lemaisa. Void. And the next question is, we haven't really addressed the Ella in our Mishnah. Void my Ella. How does that work? Finally, says the Gemara, Ella Amar Mabravashi. Hachikama. This is how we meant to learn the Mishnah. We start off Echad HaBen V'Echad HaBas Shava B'Nichsei Av U'B'Nichsei Em. Yep, the Mishnah does start, does begin by referencing, at least hiddenly, the mother and father's inheritance. Whether it's a son inheriting, he can get from the mother, he can get from his father. Equally. No difference. He's Yerush his father when he passes away. He's Yerush his mother when she passes away. And whether there's no son around and there's only a daughter. Same thing with her. She's entitled to her father's, entitled to her mother's. So we stop by referencing father and mother. Ella, says the Mishnah, but there are two distinctions between inheritance received from father and mother. Sha'ben noitel b'shnayim nechse av, ve'inoy noitel b'shnayim nechse em. Number one is regarding Yerush of Bechayra. That only applies to inheritance from father, not from mother. And the second point in the Mishnah is regarding mezainis for the daughters. That only applies to things they get from the father and not mother. Okay, so in summation, we had a shaila whether Eretz Yisrael was divided amongst the Shvatim first and then to the individuals, or directly to the individuals. We had a raya from the Pasuk and also from the Braisa that it clearly was a Shevet-oriented allocation, which combined the power of Ruach HaKodesh, Urim Ratumim, with the power of the Goyrol. Lasad Lavi, it's going to be directed by Hashem directly, and there will be 13 portions, with every member of Klal Yisrael getting a little bit of a sample of every type of possible territory, all in one. We learned about the compensation process based on differences in location. We discussed that Yeshua V'Kalev got their appropriation directly without a Goyrol, and we had a Mishnah and explained it properly. All the best to you and Hatzlacha Rabbah.